Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stone Chapel, a podcast of the staff and friends of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. My name is David Capes. I'm the Senior Research Fellow at the Library and your host for this series of podcasts. Our purpose is fairly simple. We want to bring to you great conversations with leading experts from around the world on biblical, theological, historical, and archaeological themes. Well, the list goes on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Joining me today on the Stone Chapel is John, Josh, and Peter. They are here from Phoenix Seminary. I want to let them introduce themselves so that you'll hear their voices and recognize their voices later in this conversation. John, we'll start with you.
Well, thanks for having us on, David. I'm John Mead. I teach Old Testament and Hebrew at Phoenix Seminary, and I also co-direct what is called the Text and Canon Institute. Peter and Josh here.
And that's what we're going to be talking about in a few minutes.
Yes, and I'm from Massachusetts, and so one thing I enjoy still, even though I live in Phoenix, Arizona, is watching the Red Sox.
Oh, okay.
Play.
So I saw the Boston head earlier.
Yes, and right. Every now and again I get back to Fenway Park.
Oh,
and
I have never been there.
I become Love a schoolboy again. So that's definitely one thing I enjoy.
That's exciting. Now, is it Peabody up there, or is it something else?
No, it's Peabody.
Peabody, yeah.
Is it really?
It's not Worcester either. It's Worcester. Yeah.
Peabody.
So,
yeah.
Peabody.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, I always said Peabody.
That changes my whole conception of the publisher.
Yeah, it's things are pronounced quite differently there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you haven't lost the accent completely. So anyway, we're glad that you're here. Thanks for being with us today. Josh.
Hi, I'm Josh. I am the operations director for the Text and Canon Institute at Phoenix Seminary with these guys. So I try to bring the organization to this group.
Now, why try? There is no try.
How many scholars do you know?
Herding cats, is it?
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
So, I know about all that. So operations director.
Yeah, doing logistics for our conferences and a lot of interpersonal communications with pastors and prospective students that we might work with.
Oh, like super. That. Well, we're glad you're here. Thanks, Josh. Peter.
I am Peter Gurry, and I also teach at Phoenix Seminary. I teach New Testament there. Mm-hmm. And then along with John, I co-direct the Texan Canon Institute. And as long as we're sharing about sports teams, I'm from Cincinnati, and my Bengals are about to go to the Super Bowl, I have a feeling, this weekend.
You think so?
I think so. I'm feeling it. Now, by the time people listen to this, I don't know.
Yeah.
This may sound like old news by the time
this broadcast. Yeah, a few weeks down the road, yeah.
This may not age well.
But it's been 31 years, so we're ready.
You are
so ready.
Ready for that. Yeah. Well, good luck to the Cincinnati Bengals at that point. Well, what brings you guys to Houston?
Yeah, it's great. We're actually here because we're going to be speaking to a church audience in Lumberton tomorrow on how we got the Bible. So as part of the Text and Canon Institute, and we can get into various details of this, but as part of it, part of our mission is to educate lay people and honest seekers of how we got the Bible. So I think there's, some popular views out there, ranging from maybe the Bible fell out of heaven on a sheet in the English language, maybe in the ESV version. Just folks just haven't really thought about how that bound book of pages, sometimes with red letters, wound up in their hand.
Yeah. It's an amazing history.
Yeah.
It's an
astounding history. Yeah.
Tremendous.
Yeah. But, we encounter other myths, like maybe Roman Emperor Constantine, invented the Bible through the Council of Nicaea.
He decided which books should be there, right?
That's right. And what text that they should be in. And so so we have done, maybe 10 or more of these church conferences.
Yeah.
And we give talks on how we got the different books in our Bible. So the topic of the canon of Scripture. Peter gives a great talk on the history of the English Bible translation.
Nice.
And both do, I think, probably more advanced talks, if we're honest. It's hard to bring it down, but when you start putting pictures of Hebrew and Greek manuscripts up on screens to try to show how we got the text or the wording of the Old Testament and the New. But we go there.
I find people are pretty fascinated with that. When I'm teaching a course, like I'm teaching Greek here at the Lanier Theological Library, and one of the first classes I started just putting up Greek text mm-hmm. from this first, well, second century mm-hmm. down to about the fourth century and then beyond. And
yeah.
So mm-hmm. they could see how just even the Greek mm-hmm. was developing.
We're really blessed today because we have such easy access to great photographs on the internet mm-hmm. now. You know, you can look up so many of our Greek New Testament copies and see phenomenal pictures. And like you said, I mean, John does this with the Old Testament too, but when he shows a Dead Sea Scroll, and one of his favorites to show him is the great Isaiah Scroll, where you can see where the scribe has made a correction in the margin, then all the way down the side, you know?
Yeah.
I like to show him one of the New Testament where the scribe has started to correct himself in the margin and then realized he didn't have enough space, so he has to move out to the outer margin. And people immediately connect with it because they realize, oh, I've done that myself.
Mm-hmm. And these are handwritten manuscripts.
Handwritten manuscripts.
Right? And not on inexpensive nickel page paper, right?
No, that's right. Mm-hmm. A Bible could be very expensive in the ancient world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really could.
Yeah. Yeah, what do they estimate? I think the Great Isaiah Scroll, some 17 or 19 sheep skins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like just to create the material.
And
to
just
write
think
on.
About the whole Bible. It'd take a whole herd,
yeah.
right?
That's right?
Because they were done on
the
soft underbelly of these animals, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
They'd use the leather on the back for other things, and mm-hmm. with the soft,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and it would take a whole herd. So you think about that.
Very expensive, yeah.
So you guys are about text and canon and such, and you're here. So let me ask you, what's your impressions of the Lanier Theological Library that you're here?
I mean, before we started, we were talking about some of your old Greek New Testaments that I saw downstairs, and I also noticed in your case you've got a Tyndale 1536, I think it is, Tyndale New Testament. So for listeners who may not know the significance, Tyndale is the first to translate the New Testament into English from Greek. So Wycliffe and his followers had translated it from Latin, but Tyndale translates it from the Greek, following the footsteps of Martin Luther. So, I mean, that's the tip of the iceberg of what you've got here.
Yeah.
And you put all that in these beautiful confines, and we're only sad that we don't have more time. So
we gotta get you to come back.
Yes.
For a variety of reasons. Let's talk a little bit more about the text and canon institute. What's the mission? What do you hope to do with it?
Yeah, so in short, our tagline is illuminating the history of the Bible, and that's really what we want to do, is we want to educate people on this amazing history of how we got the Bible, because as John said, it didn't drop out of heaven, and the full story of how we did get it in our leather-bound copies that have verse numbers and chapter numbers and headings, and with books in a certain order, has a phenomenal history to it. And it's a story of countless unnamed scribes who did the hard work of copying by hand. Then it's the work of people like Martin Luther or William Tyndale putting the Bible into the language of the people. And there's just an enormously rich heritage that we have as Christians. Not just in the Bible itself, of course,
mm-hmm.
that too, but in how we got it, in the Bible's own history as a book.
It strikes me when we sit down and read the Bible, we're actually reading with the church in a way, right?
That's right.
I mean, it probably took 1,000 people in the history to get that text in my hands. Right. And we don't know those people. We don't think about them very much. We just sort of accept it when we buy one at whatever mm-hmm. store we bought it, where we're gifted one. So thousands of people were involved in that process.
Or when you think about, you can pull up your phone and with a free Bible app have 100 different English translations. And then to realize that William Tyndale gave his life so that people could have one. And when it came to the Bible, he couldn't even finish the whole Bible because he was killed before he could finish the Old Testament. It gives you a sense that, we're not the first ones to ever read this book or to treasure it either, or to try to live it out. And so it really has a way of powerfully connecting us with our past as Christians.
Yeah. So these conferences that you do and these conversations that you hold, they're all live, or are they some on Zoom or on the internet?
Yeah.
How do you deliver this content?
Yeah, so our church conference called Scribes and Scripture, that is mainly live, and it's a traveling conference. So Pete and I and Josh flew out here today to be with you, and then tomorrow we'll be with the church. But I think in a couple months we've got one in Salt Lake City at a church. Mm-hmm. So right now it's a traveling conference. We're going to try to do a few more in Phoenix mm-hmm. over this year, and try to experiment with some live streaming and that sort of thing. But that would be the first time that we've done that, maybe this fall. So that's kind of our resourcing level. How do we resource churches, engage with the culture on this question of the history of the Bible? But the Text and Canon Institute hits at two other levels. It hits at, we try to mentor students through the Text and Canon Institute Fellowship Scholarship. The Text and Canon Institute is hosted at Phoenix Seminary,
mm-hmm.
And we have a Master of Theology program there. So if you have an MDiv, but you're looking for more training and education before, say, going on to a PhD, and your interest is studying manuscripts or canon formation or biblical languages or something like that, we want you. We want you to come and do our THM program and be mentored by Dr. Gurry and myself.
Okay.
And so we basically, I think we, the scholarship covers 90% of the tuition.
Really? Wow, that's very,
So, yeah, so we've, again, we have generous donors to the TCI that, that help make that very possible. So we're always looking for more applicants and more students to come and do that. So that's kind of the middle tier. And then just this past November, we hosted our first roundtable discussion or academic colloquium on the topic of origin of Alexandria, the church father, as a grammarian or a philologist. And
explain it. Philologist, what does that mean?
Yeah, philologist, I think, is just a fancy term for a grammarian, someone who not only knows the language, but also would correct errors in manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned a little while ago, there's a lot of anonymous characters in the story for how we get the Bible. But actually, on some rare, precious exceptions, we actually have names.
Of people. Who are part of that, right?
Who are part of that, yeah. And so Origen of Alexandria, though he moves to Caesarea in the land around 232, and I think he does a lot of textual work on copies of the Old Testament in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but there's just a lot of unknowns about how he did it, and do we still have remnants of his work? And his famous work, and I'll have to explain this term too, his famous work is called the Hexapla. Mm-hmm. Which is made up of two Greek words, hex, six, pla, fold, or columned, six-columned Bible. So if you've ever seen those parallel Bible versions in English, right, there's several of them. They usually have four versions side by side. Well, the history of that in Christian circles goes back to Origen, who put a Hebrew column in Hebrew letters in the first slot, and the second slot was still the Hebrew text, but in Greek letters. So maybe a transcription or transliteration for those Christian scholars who didn't know Hebrew but wanted to maybe know what the Hebrew said.
Right.
Yeah. And then the four major Greek versions of Aquila, Symmachus, and the Septuagint in column five, that would have been the major version of the church, and then the version of Theodotion. Well, anyways, this is a massive project.
I can imagine.
I don't even know what the estimates of animal skins are for what it takes to create this one time. We know it was probably not copied in its entirety. Like again, it was created. Maybe some books, like the Psalms, maybe were copied in this way, because there's still remaining fragmentary copies of the six-columned synopsis.
That's just an important part of the history of our Bible.
Right. And so
how it came from the Hebrew and the Greek and then ultimately into the Latin. And
That's right.
That's a snapshot of time.
You're absolutely right, yeah. Because it no doubt that textual work influences the church father Jerome, who is responsible for the Latin Vulgate, which is a translation of the Hebrew into Latin, which influences Western culture all the way up to the Reformation.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's lots of little pieces here, but I would just say lesser known pieces to the history of the Bible. So our colloquium had 11 scholars that gathered together, patristic scholars, Old Testament scholars, scholars in origin specifically, in Septuagint, that Greek version of the Old Testament. And the goal will be to edit those papers here over the next year and try to submit them and get them published. Mm. So,
well, I hope that's possible for you.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, we'll buy a copy here at the Linear Theological Library for certain.
For sure.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have kind of a popular level where you're trying to live this, but you also have kind of an academic student level, but you also have a very high sort of scholarly academic level where the real work, in some degree, where the real work is done, and yet you want that to filter down to the students and then ultimately to people in the pew.
Yeah, and part of our motivation for doing all that was, you know, sometimes scholars can think, well, I'll do my top tier academic research and then hope that it trickles down to the lay person in the pew. And it just partly depends on the disposition of the scholar, but we really wanted from the get-go with the Texts and Canon Institute to do all three levels from the same source so that we could participate in cutting-edge scholarship, but then also produce resources from some of those same scholars, including ourselves, to produce stuff to help lay people understand how we got the Bible, so that when they hear from us, they know they're getting something more credible. So, for example, what inspired our new website that we launched back in November at textincanon.org was, if you Google what is the Bible, The first result is from the History Channel. At least it was when we did it.
Okay.
And it's an article on what is the Bible, and you can't get through the first paragraph as a biblical scholar before you say, what in the world is this talking about? It's just bad. It's cringeworthy. So we thought there really need to be good resources on the internet, because we know that's where people go nowadays to find answers, like it or not.
I mean, the cell phone has just become the go-to place for all kinds of information.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's any good.
Exactly. Right? So what we want to do is produce things that were still accessible in the same way the History Channel article was, but were from more reputable sources and being written by people who really know what they were talking about. So that's what we've tried to do by producing articles on the whole range of how we got the Bible at the Text and Canon site.
So if people want to know about that website, first of all, what is that website?
It's the URL is textandcanon.org. And if you go there, you'll find
textandcanon.org.
Yep, listeners should know it's canon with one N.
Yeah.
I don't know what you'll get if you
not
put
like
two
a howitzer or anything like that. No, it's not that. C-A-N-O-N. And the word canon has itself a very interesting kind of history.
That's right.
It starts in the Greek from the word reed, right? Yeah. Or measuring stick.
Yeah, that's
kind
right.
Of way.
That's exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right.
So it develops with the sense of kind of something that you use to measure other things by.
Right.
And that's the idea of the biblical canon. It's the authority that you use to measure other authorities against
to see if they measure up.
Right. Right.
That's why it matters so much which books are included and which aren't. Yeah. Which ones are part of that canon.
Yeah. I tell students, I begin a course on the New Testament, that the New Testament is 27 Greek documents written between 50 AD and 100 AD that describe the life of Jesus, the birth of the church, and speaks as a norm for Christian ethics and practice. Mm-hmm. That's my kind of working definition. Mm-hmm. And I said, each part of that, we're going to unpack. And why are there 27 books?
Yep.
You know,
right.
who would have thought of what 27?
Why 27?
Why not 26? Mm-hmm. Why not 29, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're discerning and sorting these things out from a host of other books that are being written at the time.
Sure. That's right.
Like Shepherd of Hermas, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And Didache. And I mean, some of these other ones are that some wanted to include in the canon at a time, but then later on decided no. Mm-hmm. And then some weren't too sure about Revelation, right? That Revelation had a hard time making it into the canon. So anyway, it's a fascinating story.
And there were other books that Christians valued but didn't think belonged in the canon.
Right.
You know? So it wasn't that just because they didn't include
not
it in the canon.
Not by C.S. Lewis.
Not by C.S. Lewis.
Not those books.
We
love C.S. Lewis.
We do. He's in a different canon. Just the beloved canon. So it is, understanding that history is really important for Christians to know, again, that where did we get this book from? Yeah.
Now, if folks wanted to come and maybe study with you, students are interested, how would they do that?
Sure. So they could look up more information about Phoenix Seminary at ps.edu, and that'll tell them everything about the seminary where John and I both teach at. So our full-time job is teaching at the seminary.
Okay.
And then we also run the Text and Canon Institute there with the help of Josh, who, as we said, he does all the heavy lifting for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that nice? So ps.edu. PS means Phoenix Cemetery.
Cemetery. We've heard that before.
Yes, We've heard that before. No, Phoenix Seminary. That's an old joke. Right?
That is an old joke. Yes.
Phoenix Seminary, and you guys, it's a rather new seminary, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Goes back to the 80s?
Yeah, 1980s. Maybe 33 years old.
Is it related to a particular denomination?
Well, its roots are, it was a satellite campus of Western Seminary in Portland, from Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Western was pulling out of Phoenix around the late 80s, early 90s. But the seminary had already become such a great resource for the local churches and pastors there that those same local pastors kind of banded together and kept it going under the name Phoenix Seminary. Mm. So it's non-denominational still, very much like Western, I think, at this point. So,
okay. Yeah. And the next question may be obvious, but if there's a church out there that would like to have you guys come and do a weekend with them on how we got the Bible, how would they do that? Would they go back to Text and Canon? Is that where they would go?
Yep, they go to our website at textandcanon.org and look under the events tab, and you'll find Scribes and Scripture. That's the name of the conference. And there's lots more information there about what we do, the topics we cover, and then how you can request more information, because we'd love to come to visit your church or also college ministries too. It's a great thing to introduce your college ministry to, is this question, because a lot of young people have this question as well.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of questions about the Bible, and you guys are tackling some of the most important ones with your institute, and I wish you well. We'd love to see you coming back to the Lanier Theological Library, and maybe we can arrange something together, to work together, to collaborate.
We'd love that.
Either here or maybe over in jolly old England.
Sounds wonderful.
Be great.
Thank you guys for being with us today on the Stone Chapel.
Thanks, David.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks to Brent Johnson and Janet Seifert for editing these podcasts. Thanks as well to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Theological Library Foundation. If you have questions, comments, or would just like to be in touch, please email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. Thanks for listening.